The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You are listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Ski. This is the TWBC Podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, greetings one and all, and welcome to this latest edition of the TWBC Podcast. I'm the aforementioned Tony Lightfoot, and we've got a rather special episode today here from San Gervasio Bresciacano. Just a little ways between Brescia and Cremona, if you're trying to locate us somewhere on the map, and the host of the 10th annual San Gervasio Pro-Am. And the person that that everyone is talking about for his recent slalom form, which has allowed him to win at least three tournaments on the trot so far this coming season that we're in right now. It's Will Asher. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, Tony. Yeah, it's nice to be here, sat with you in Italy in front of the mic.
Indeed. I don't think it's going to be an occurrence that's going to be too rare for this competition, you know, because you've been on a tear lately, haven't you? I mean, you opened up the season with the Swiss Pro Slalom, right? The win there.
Yeah, I mean, we did a lot of work over the winter, and I was able to take the win at Swiss, and really that was my goal for the season, was to just, you know, try as hard as I can and hopefully get a win, which is never easy with this field.
And a win is understating it a little bit, because a few weeks later you travel to Marrakesh in the middle of Morocco and basically just tear everything apart there with that excursion into 975 meters 43 off. I mean, just tell us a little bit about that whole experience with Morocco, you know, because it was totally new site, totally different kind of site, you know. And I mean, just tell us how that week, how those few days were.
Yeah, I mean, it was a brand new site. I think the lake was dug 18 months before we got there, so essentially we were the first event, and it's, you know, it's a big unknown. You never know if you're going to get there, and you know, we're going to be struggling to run 38 off, but, you know, we were able to get there a couple of days early. We had some practice. Practice went really well. Felt very familiar. Felt very, very much like home. And we knew we were having, you know, we had the best drivers in the world. You know, we had
Alex King.
Alex King was our driver. And
just Nathan McGarry.
Nathan McGarry. And we just, you know, right there, you know that that's at least taking one of the variables out of the mix. You know, we got a competent driver, and we all now have a lot of experience with them. So the writing was on the wall to potentially be really good. And then once we practiced and we understood that the lake actually skis really, really well, it was awesome. Such a rad experience.
What was the thing that you took away from those practices, you know? Because, I mean, every site skis a little bit different, mineral content, water clarity, what have you, water temperature, you know. So, I mean, when you came off the water and you practiced for the first time, which I actually saw you do, and there was these rumors going around that someone had actually run 41 off and it just happened to be you, and that you made allusions to that fact, you know, with the pre-show for the TWBC webcast there. But when it came down to the final round, you know, I mean, however you prepared yourself, whatever you took away from the practice obviously worked.
Yeah, I mean, what I took away from the practice was I didn't need to really think about anything besides what I'd been doing in practice. It just felt like home. That's how I'd been skiing at home. And it was, you know, you get to some sites and you just have to, you got to change things up a little bit. You got to change your rhythm. You got to change the way you pull. You got to change your timing. You can even change a letter on the boat. But I got there and I'm like, wow, it just feels like home. So right away, you eliminate basically a lot of the unknowns, but also a lot of the potential variables you could have to introduce to try and feel normal. So just the fact we could practice felt normal. First two rounds were fine. I mean, it was just basically about getting into the final and seeding yourself how you want. And then in the final, it's just about switching off and attacking and just believing in yourself enough to do the movements you need to do to run lots of buoys. So,
and certainly believing enough in the drivers as well. I mean, the initial part of this answer, I mean, you in no uncertain terms mentioned the drivers right off the bat, you know.
And the drivers for us are everything. They're you know, we train really, really hard, and my expectation of a driver is that they also train really, really hard. I want my driver to have as much experience as I do running 41 off. If a driver never gets the opportunity to practice at 41, I'm like, I'm sorry, that's not my problem. That's the driver's problem. It's their job to get out there. It's their job to get out there and practice. It's their job to get the experience. It's their job to understand. My job is to understand how to run buoys behind the boat. So just the fact we had him, you know, someone that he spent a lot of time with us. So, you know, I love to talk about driving. I love to learn about skiing, but also teach about driving and learn about driving. So,
yeah. Yeah, because I mean, like Alex King has definitely gone through all the grunt work of being a top class driver. I mean, he drove for several years over at Jack's Place, which is where you train more often than not in Florida. Yep. So you kind of have this little bit of a, you know, relationship between driver and skier. So you kind of knew what to expect from him, you know. So
yeah, and driver is all about mentality. It's about, you've got to be, you know, quietly confident. You've got to believe enough in yourself, but you've also got to have an open mind. It's very much the same mentality as a skier. You can't be ignorant. You can't be believe you know everything. You've got to be willing to ask questions. You've got to be willing to be humbled. And that's, you know, when we first started, that's what's been great about skiing with John at Travis Ski School, is he's happy to put anyone in the boat. And then right away, you're actually amazed at who ends up being good drivers, because, you know, just their mentality right away clicks, or they ask questions, or they're willing to learn, they're willing to change. It's just a huge part of it. And all the best drivers I know, that's the approach they take. You know, they want to talk about it. They're willing to ask questions. They're willing to say they're wrong. And that's, I mean, it's a huge part of what we do.
And part of that answer that you just gave me, I was kind of nodded a little bit there, because everyone knows that, you know, in his past competitive life, Alex, you know, he was primarily a jumper, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, he slalomed halfway decently, but jumping was more or less his bag. And then, you know, he gets behind the wheel, you know, and suddenly become, well, I wouldn't say suddenly, because it does take quite a...
It's been a while.
it's been a while behind the wheel, and he's really excelled on slalom driving. And I mean, yeah. I mean, to underscore that point, whenever the shore path data was taken from the boat, I mean, it was in single digits, wasn't it, for that, yeah, for that 39?
Yeah, and that shows an understanding as well. And the best drivers in the world, they don't move the boat much. And I mean, the way I'll explain it is, it's like you can take someone that's weaving the boat, but I call it a micro weave. I mean, we're in rhythm as a slalom skier in the boat, and the boat also needs to be in rhythm. So the driver itself, they essentially need to be weaving the boat, but it's a micro level. And that just means the boat's moving at the right time to pick up the skier, release the skier, and just give the skier full confidence. So it just takes time. It takes experience. You got to pull a lot of guys at 41 off if you want to stand a chance.
Do you think people look at the wrong place whenever they do their own self-analysis of their driver with the end course video? You know, they look at the rooster tail more than they do the pole.
Yeah, that's a really good question. Where you look, and, you know, we talk about this all the time. It's one thing to gather data and gather information. It's another thing to actually be able to, you know, process that information. You can have all the information in the world, but if you're asking the wrong questions, then it makes no sense. So, you know, it's just about how the boat moves and just understanding the basic movement of that.
All right, then we'll move away a little bit from cool. Morocco. Only before we move away entirely from Morocco, I mean, first of all, that event is coming back. I mean, I'm sure you'd be pleased to know about that. But I mean, how the skiers were treated and how the whole tournament was packaged together, you know, and not just on the water but off the water, is a real paradigm for some events coming forward.
Yeah, it's always special to show up and actually feel like you're really appreciated, and you know, everyone's happy to see you, and they want to do their best to make sure you have a really great experience. There are other events that, you know, have been able to give us similar feelings, but I would say, for as far as like the gold standard, they definitely hit it. You know, they you know, really nice hotels, really great food, great experiences. They wanted us to see and appreciate Morocco, which you know, that's nice. That's really cool.
Yep, take care of the small things and the big things take care of themselves.
Yeah, pretty much, right? Yeah, we're pretty simple people. We don't need much.
Okie dokie. All right then, so beyond that, a couple of days later, y'all end up in France, Dom Matin, the Funglis competition, which won again, which you won again.
Yeah.
And... you know, by about this point, you know, by the end of Dom Matin, you know, and you've won three tournaments so far in the season, you know, what are you kind of thinking about at this point, you know, because in some seasons you get like maybe one pro win in the course of a season, and in some instances that you would say, okay, I'm cool with that, but. Now you're on three. Now, by the time you get away from Dom Matin, once you finish with that, I mean, you've got three wins of the season. Now you're like thinking, what's going on here? How am I going to handle this?
You know? Pretty much, yeah. Hey, how do you handle it? How do you not mess it up? Yeah, it's a funny sport. There's nothing. I mean, you can always look back in hindsight and be like, okay, well, yeah, I did certain things differently over the winter, and then I can look back over my career now of 20 years, and I can really start to see a pattern of stuff that I've done when I actually do well, and it's not always what you would think it would be. So I look back at the pattern of what I did this winter, and it actually falls in alignment with what I've done when I ski really well in the past. There's no guarantee. I mean, everyone's skiing so well, and it's just can you do it at the time, and essentially can you get a little bit of luck and kind of, you know, make it happen at the right time. I wouldn't say I've got the winning formula. I wish I did and I could do it every single time, but
put it in a bottle and sell it.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I'd sell it. I'd make like $20.
you'd make a fair amount of money, I guess, on that one.
Some of those old boys would pay a pretty penny, probably.
indeed. Now, one thing that kind of struck me a little bit is that in the round prior to the finals, I mean, you started off from about midpoint in the field, or midway, maybe closer towards the end of the field. So, I mean, it doesn't seem to me that you're at all unnerved or shaken that you weren't, that you didn't finish right at the very end of the field, you know, before going into the final. So I mean, you're prepared to really slog it out, you know, from the mid or the back of the field to get the win.
Yeah, I don't think it gets talked about enough. I think, you know, with Nate running 41 so consistently, I think people have kind of forgotten that 41 is really, really hard, and it's actually really, really scary. So
scary from what point of view?
Scary, just the speed we have, the amount of pull we got to take, the intensity, the toll on the body. It's actually a really, really dangerous line length to run lots and lots of buoys at. So part of me is like, in the opening rounds, I'm not willing to sacrifice myself as much as I maybe am for the final or for the win, where it actually matters and it really counts. So mentally, I think I'm on preservation mode a little bit. And then in the final, it's like, well, I guess here we are. Let's just, you know,
let's get after it.
Take that extra risk, take that bit of extra pull, commit just a little bit further. And because you kind of get to the point where you're in the danger zone, and it's either you're doing it or you're not. And you're going to either make the turn or you're going to crash. And
yeah,
you know, that's kind of what happened to John. He put himself in the position in Funglis. He set himself really well for one, got a really big swing into two, and it ended up blowing up. But it's such a fine line at 41. And I think it doesn't really, I don't think people really understand how dangerous it is.
Okay, I mean, kind of give someone like me, or someone that has just jumped onto this podcast for the first time, that kind of sense, you know. I mean, because I mean, you've run 41 a number of times over the years. You know, I think about two seasons ago, there were at least a couple of competitions where you actually run 41 off. I think there was one in Greece, and there was one elsewhere. You know, but the speed and the athleticism and just the tenacity, you know, it's underestimated, isn't it?
Yeah, it's maybe hard to come up with an analogy or a comparison. Maybe, I don't know, you're driving down the road at just normal speed in traffic, and then suddenly, okay, let's go 150 miles an hour and try and weave through traffic. That's,
or try and switch in formulas from F2 to F1. I mean, the cars.
Yeah, it's an exponential increase in everything. It's an exponential increase in load, in speed, in power, in risk, in, you know, you name the factor, and the measurable factor, it just gets increased, and it's really scary. I mean, it feels good when you're doing it and you're swinging and you continue to go and go and go, but you know, it's really tough. Yeah.
All right then. So you've had Morocco, you've had Don Martin. I mean, on top of the fact that you won the Swiss Pro Slalom, another midweek competition rears its head in Monaco, specifically Roquefort Saint-Argent. Yeah. And that was certainly an event that kind of made the headlines, not so much for who won, but who had really come to grief in the run up towards the end. Now, you didn't win that competition, did you?
I won that one.
Yeah, you won that one as well. It's hard to keep track of the ones that you finish on the podium and the ones that you actually win. But yeah, you won Monaco. But obviously, you know to whom I'm alluding to. Yeah. How close were you to the dock, and how close at proximity were you to how that came down?
Yeah, I wasn't close. I was actually on the start dock, and it happened mid course. But I was watching from the dock. But you can't see the dock because of the trees. You know, you can't see where he actually hit. But I saw him going out to five, and you know, he kind of got pitched forward. He was skiing on 1 foot, and I was like, he's not slowing down. And he just went, and obviously, you know, it's a really scary thing that happened. It's really sad. I feel bad for him, obviously, but it's a testament to his nature, as far as, you know, he's going to win or die trying in a way. You know, the kid, he has no quit. I mean, he was either going to run the pass, or, you know, there's just no give up in him, which you have to admire, and that's what makes him such a fierce competitor.
Yeah, you know, it definitely puts some of what you do into very harsh perspective, you know, and right back to the point that we made earlier.
Exactly.
You know, that with the danger and everything.
Yeah, I know, it's all in control until it goes wrong, and then you quickly realize how much danger we're in. And you know, I think we even take it for granted, and we really have to be able to put ourselves in those positions. We really have to forget about the dangers. And you know, then something like that happens, it's just a real, you know what happened to John the weekend before, that happened super quick, didn't even see it coming. And then obviously with Freddie, it's it happened so quick, and there was nothing he could do to stop it. And it's just a reality check of what we're doing is super dangerous. But shit, we've still got to go, and you know, you can't let those intrusive thoughts kind of rule your mind. And you know, here we are again in another tournament, trying to chase lots of buoys. And yeah.
Anyway, how have you adapted so well to skiing like two tournaments in a week? You know, I mean, we've got two midweek tournaments by this time, Morocco and Monaco. Yeah, hard to say those.
Yeah.
those back to back without stumbling.
Yeah, and Marrakesh.
And Marrakesh.
A lot of M's.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've got Don Martin in the mix as well, and Fungus and all of that. You know, so I mean, for the first time in a long time, the slalom skiers are really been put through the ringer so far as the tournament schedule is concerned, with four events in the space of in less than 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, no, it's tough. I was just thinking yesterday was my first practice set since Marrakesh. So, you know, we basically go one event. I skied in Marrakesh, took one practice set, and then the next day I just did a down and back, which is essentially getting wet. Then we had the event. And then since then, yesterday was my first practice set since Marrakesh. So really it's, and I don't ski that much. I maybe ski, you know, 3 days a week normally. So this has been quite intense for me. I got a bout of food poisoning in Monaco. So that kind of set me back a little bit. So you end up just on the recovery train. So, you know, what you'd imagine you're doing when you're recovering, you sleep a lot, you eat a lot, you drink a lot, try and recover, try and stretch, try not to do anything too strenuous, and just stay in the moment.
And yeah. when you do have the fortunate instance where you are able to practice prior to an event such as this one here in San Gervasio, you know, what kind of goes through your mind? I mean, what are you looking to get out of that practice? And it sounds like a broken record a little bit, you know, because this almost sounds similar to a question that I gave asked of you in regards to Morocco. But I mean, certain sites require, you know, certain types of strategy, and in terms of what you gain out of the practice and how you apply that to tournaments.
Yeah, so I mean, really, the main reason to practice is so the body doesn't go into hibernation, because, you know, now I did actually take off Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then I got a couple of passes Wednesday night, and then I practiced today, Thursday. So it's about, you know, just waking the body up so you don't get to preliminary round on Saturday and your body's half asleep. And then just trying to learn something. You know, we have Malibu's this weekend. We have great drivers. Obviously, we have Mario and Manuel, which we're always grateful to have such experience. So that's already one of the variables that's kind of taken off the plate. Don't have to think about them. Don't have to worry about them. So then it's just understanding, you know, it's, do we have to change anything? Can I go with plan A? Do I have to go to plan B, C, D? You know, what kind of timing does the site require to run lots of buoys? And that's basically it. We're just, you know, just playing around and trying to get familiar, trying to get comfortable, trying to take the stress off the weekend.
And try and brush off the cobwebs a little bit since the last competition.
Yeah, basically a stretch out, yeah.
Indeed. A few days ago, you went over to Trento, right?
Yeah, we went to Tigas's house, yeah.
Which is something that probably in a million years that you wouldn't have even considered doing in the height of your rivalry with Thomas de Gasperi. And I spoke to him a few days ago, you know, before you guys made it over there. And he considers you a friend now.
yeah. No, it's. I always say the last time you really want to hang out with me is on a start dock. It's not, you know, you're just there for a job, and, you know, events essentially. Tigas has been my competition most of my life. So then it was great to be able to hang out with him at his house and, you know, spend some time with his mom and his friends and, you know, eat his lovely food and just kind of be in his environment and, you know, understand him from his perspective and, you know, get him to show me around his town. And that, I think it's great. I think, you know, I know over time we're going to be great friends. So it's pretty cool to kind of get that ball rolling. Now we just have to get him to England.
I know that Traudy makes a pretty mean pasta at a sampling at lunch or a few days ago.
I think she was making tiramisu, which was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, fresh tiramisu always always definitely
Looks amazing.
Yeah, I don't want to indulge upon it too much, but there you go.
maybe they're trying to sabotage me.
Yeah, their own secret devious plan, you know. So you're here at San Gervasio. Have you won this competition before? I believe you have.
I have, yeah. I won it a few years ago. I won it, yeah.
Okie dokie. And this is the 10th edition of the San Gervasio Pro-Am. And, you know, and you've got to hand it to someone like Fedele and Matteo and Claudio and Gennady and the rest of the folks here for not only bringing the tournament to fruition, but to doing it 10 years on the trot. I mean, that takes something, right?
Yeah, it's a huge commitment. I couldn't imagine running a tournament. It just seems like so much work, and, you know, their passion and dedication for it is admirable. I'm excited for tomorrow night. They do a fantastic dinner. You know, really show us, you know, the foods and the culture of the region, and just to come here back to Brescia is really cool.
Indeed. You know, I certainly look forward to that first night. Yeah. You know, and I'll certainly look forward to announcing for the event. But when it's all said and done, and the event's over, pretty much everyone heads back. Well, before they head back to Europe, you go back to England for the Oxford Pro-Am. You know, how excited are you for that?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. Anytime you get to have a tournament in your home country is pretty special. I got a pretty terrible record of competing in my own country, but...
Very seldom winning.
Yeah, I think the last time I won would be Prince's Pro-Am back in the day, but... I've never actually been to Oxford, so it's going to be cool to go down there and see what Stevie's got going on. And
it's a nighttime slalom.
Nighttime slalom, which, I don't know, see if my old eyes will correct quickly enough to make that happen.
I'll probably get some of those yellow Oakley specs, you know, brighten rather than shadow.
That's probably not a terrible idea, yeah. No, we get to, you know, Monday, go home, go back to Hazelwoods, Lincoln, spend time with my family, and then, you know, I'll drive down to Oxford late as I can.
Grab a practice set, I guess.
Probably not going to practice, just kind of go for it.
All right, then, just straight off the dock, no practice. I mean, you've had enough of those, like, I don't know, like two practices in the last 6 weeks, I guess. But there you go. But then afterwards, you venture back to the United States, I'm guessing. I mean, and there's going to be a few weeks before the next pro tournament, I gather, you know. So what do you intend to do in that intervening time?
Yeah, so I got a couple of things I have to do. So we actually have a new ski, so I've got to test that through. But I think probably what I'll do is take some time off and give my body a chance just to hit reset, which it always kind of sucks because then you have to rebuild after that. But
I'm sure Nicole appreciates you being home.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it'll be, you know, it'll be good to just take some time and just recover and maybe reflect on what's happened on this trip and see if I can take any lessons away from it. And that'll probably be what will happen. Yeah, get back on my bike, do some more physical activity, try and clear the brain out.
And work a little bit with Dave and the rest of the folks at Syndicate, you know, for the latest edition of the Works model, I guess.
Yeah, we're always working. So there's something cooking right now. It's actually ready. It's just, you know, they're like, do you want us to send it to Europe? It's like, well, I don't have any time.
By the time it gets to Europe, you ought to be on your way back to the States, I guess.
Yeah, so, you know, when you've only had one practice set, it's not really the best time to be testing skis. So I'll wait till I get home and then I'll just fully hit reset, you know, blank canvas, and see if you can keep improving.
Okay, so any other experimentation with equipment aside from skis, you know, I mean, bindings or what have you? Or?
Yeah, I try and question everything. So my binding's a little bit different this year than it has been in the past, and just trying to see if...
In what way?
It just allows my leg to move differently. Like, it allows me to move to different angles, and that's kind of allowed my body to get into a different position that I haven't been able to get into, and it's definitely increased my consistency. I got a new ski and a new binding the week before I came to Europe, so this has been a big test. I'd say so far.
And I'd say that test is run perfectly.
I mean, sometimes you got to jump in with both feet and just trust the process, and Dave was great before I left. I was like, man, what do you think? Do I just go back to familiar, or do I trust this feeling that I'm having? And he's like, man, at this point, you've just got to trust your feeling and go with it. So I'm thankful I did. I mean, if maybe I had a bad practice ride in Morocco, I wouldn't have ridden that ski. I'd have ridden my baseline ski, which doesn't have the same potential I have now. So it's just even at this point, it's trying to learn something new.
Learn something new. Yeah. That's the spice of life, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
So we'll round off the podcast a little bit here. One final question, and I'm sure a lot of people have been following your career from the early 2000s and what have you. So, I mean, honestly, how much longer do you have in you? You know, so far as a career lifespan. I mean, because I mean, it seems like you're at your peak right now. I mean, with the tournament wins that you've had so far this season, and you're trying new stuff. You know, so I mean, it seems to me that for Will Asher, the sky is the limit, you know?
Yeah, there's still some stuff about my skiing that really bugs me. So I'm motivated to figure that out. So I think once that motivation and once the interest in improving goes away, I think it'll quickly die. So, you know, for where I am now, I'm pretty happy. I love the team around me. I love the people I ski with. I love the people I get to work with on a daily basis. I think if that situation changed, then yeah, it'll probably be time to move on. But for now, if everything stays status quo, I think we'll be okay for a minute.
All right, then. And this has been the latest episode of the TWBC podcast. Before we say cheerio to the good folks listening in, podcast at waterskibroadcasting.com is the address that you can reach out to me on if you have any questions or concerns or anything to do with the podcast. I'll be more than happy to answer those questions. And for Will, an opportunity for you to say thanks and to those nearest and dearest.
Yeah, thanks, Tony. Just thanks for all the people that support me and, you know, all my sponsors and family. Just the people that kind of have patience with me to be as weird as I am and do what I do. So I think everyone knows who they are, and thank you.
All right, then. With that, that brings to a conclusion this this episode of the TWBC podcast, episode 169.
Damn,
170 will be on its way fairly soon. But until then, this is Tony Lightfoot saying ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.